This is a Chronicle podcast, bringing you ideas in the service of medicine.
From the Chronicle podcast system, this is Vendor on Psoriasis with Dr. Ron Vendor. Based on the popular Vendor on Psoriasis column in the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy, Dr. Vendor provides brief synopses of recent significant clinical developments in psoriasis research and provides his observations and comments to accompany each report. In each episode, Dr. Vendor will answer questions and offer his expert observations and anecdotes on treating this chronic disease. If you have a question for him or want to be in touch at any time, just send an email to vendor@chronicle.org. That's V-N-D-E-R at chronicle.org. And, if you attach a voice clip, we might even use your question on an upcoming episode. Support for this podcast comes from Sun Pharma Canada. Sun Pharma is a world leader in specialty therapeutics and is now positioned to be an even larger contributor to the Canadian dermatology landscape. Learn more at www.sunpharma.com. And now, here's Jeremy Visser.
Welcome back. I'm Jeremy Visser of the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy. You're listening to the Vendor on Psoriasis podcast with Dr. Ron Vendor. In our 15th episode, Dr. Vendor will be talking about the oral therapy apremilast in real-world studies, comorbid obesity, and how smoking may affect psoriasis. Welcome back to our real-world podcast, Dr. Vendor. And that's real world, not the real world. I don't think we have the budget for 90s reality show guests.
Yeah, I would say not. But you never know. You never know.
Our first study today looks at using apremilast to treat psoriasis. What's your take on the study, Dr. Vendor?
Well, I really like this study because apremilast was one of the first oral advanced systemics that we had that was a PDE4 inhibitor. It served a great purpose with respect to safety. However, its efficacy was just not as much as we would have liked it. But patients still demand oral therapy, and they don't like taking needles, and some of them really like to take pills. They may be needle phobic, or they just feel that their disease is maybe not as serious if they take pills for some reason. So this was patients that were exposed to apremilast, and that was about 340 patients. And then they had comparison to three other cohorts that were not taking apremilast, which totaled almost 5,000 patients. And when looking at the real world, I guess people call it real world evidence, but it's really a real world experience. There were very, very few side effects that were seen in both groups. There were very, very low or insignificant serious infections or opportunistic infections in the apremilast cohort, and they was very similar to the non-apremilast cohorts. And those non-apremilast cohorts, some were in injectable biologics and others were not. But the problem was is that you have almost 5,000 non-apremilast cohorts comparing it to only 340 apremilast cohorts. So that is a limitation. But it did show that at least in over 300 patients, there were just no apremilast safety signals that were noted. And so in terms of safety, this just reassures what we see in the clinic, that the real-world experience with apremilast is a great option and a safe option. However, there are newer, more effective oral advanced systemic therapies that are readily available on the market now, namely deucravacitinib, which is a different mechanism of action, a TYK2 inhibitor.
This next study looks at psoriasis patients who might view comorbid obesity as unrelated to their psoriasis. Dr. Vendor, what are your thoughts on this?
Thanks, Jeremy. So comorbid obesity is certainly related to patients with psoriasis, and patients don't seem to understand that psoriasis is not just a skin disease, it's a systemic inflammatory disease of which skin is a manifestation. So people may say, well, that's fine. If I lose weight, am I going to be able to improve my psoriasis or without any particular treatment? And this study looked at weight loss in patients that had obesity and psoriasis. Now, obesity is measured different ways, usually by BMI. For those that know me, you know, I consider myself overweight, but I don't consider myself obese. But if I look at my BMI, it says I'm obese, which really is disturbing. But so maybe I am. I don't know. So they looked at weight loss, and I don't have psoriasis, but they looked at weight loss, and it's a small number, but they looked at 24 adults, about 62% were males, and they had a mean BMI of about 35.2. And this was done in the UK. And they asked these patients, do you think that your psoriasis is related to your weight? And most of the participants said no. And they said not at all. And when the physicians explained that it could be related and more likely is related, that maybe a weight loss program could improve their psoriasis as well as improve their general health as well. And so they found in this study that it's important for physicians to explain to their patients that their weight and their psoriasis are very, very likely related, that improving or reducing the weight and getting some weight loss with behavioral and emotional support may lead to improved outcomes with their psoriasis. Not necessarily that the psoriasis is going to go away, but it may be easier to treat because we know that some biologics are sensitive to the weights of the patient, and generally that the heavier the patient, the more difficult it is to treat that patient, even though it's not truly a weight-based type of dosing like infliximab or ustekinumab and more recently secukinumab, that this weight does have an influence not only on their general health, but also on their response to certain medications and biologics.
Our last study looks at the link between smoking, obesity, and psoriasis. What did you think of this study, Dr. Vender?
So here we go again with more of this systemic type of inflammatory aspect. And now we're adding another confounding factor. So we talked about psoriasis and obesity, and we know that these are related. But what about smoking? What about smoking? So if you look at smoking as an independent risk factor, for those that are at a risk for psoriasis, so let's say there's some genetic predisposition, which we can't always measure, that there is the odds ratio of 2.11 for these patients that smoke to develop psoriasis as well. And if their BMI is higher, they're more likely to smoke as well and more likely to have psoriasis. And it was found as well that the better and the longer that they slept, which is interesting, that may actually protect them from developing psoriasis as well. Now, that's interesting. I looked at this years ago. And IL-17 is elevated in psoriasis, and we know that. And that when we go to sleep, our IL-17 drops a slight bit, not enough to make your psoriasis go away when you sleep, but it makes you drop. So this sort of makes sense to me to say that, well, if you sleep longer, your IL-17 drops longer, and that may lead to improving psoriasis in these patients, and also related to smoking. It's super complicating because it's always which came first. We don't really know. But generally, a healthy lifestyle with reduced weight and lack of smoking, and especially in palmoplantar psoriasis, we know that palmoplantar psoriasis is exacerbated by smoking in some cases. However, there is evidence that smoking can actually improve certain components of inflammatory bowel disease. So I doubt that gastroenterologists are recommending that their patients with inflammatory bowel disease start to smoke to control their bowels. But it's one of the few things that I know that smoking can be beneficial, but I'm not recommending it. I've never heard of a gastroenterologist recommending it either.
And now for some listener questions. This one is from Newfoundland. How important are real-world studies, and what place do you think they have in dermatology?
So that question comes up all the time. What is a real-world study? Is it a study? Is it real-world evidence? Or is it a real-world experience? And I think that the terminology is moving to real-world experience. It is what we collect. It is what we gather in terms of data from patients that are willing to volunteer in this, whereas other countries, they must go into a registry, such as Denmark and Sweden. I believe that they must be in a registry, and I'm sure there's many other countries too. Here, the Health Canada sort of mandates that there be a registry for certain medications, but it's not an enforced and it's not an absolute requirement. So these real world experience databases really are telling us what's happening in our practice, different from the clinical trial patients, because usually they're a bit more complicated. And quite often, and thankfully so, the experience that we have in the real world mimics the clinical trial, usually the phase three pivotal clinical trial data that is there. So in other words, AEs are not increased in real world, or sometimes efficacy or lack of efficacy is not very much different. But real world experiences, it doesn't look at efficacy quite often. It's really looking mostly at safety and longer term safety. So the experience that we have in the real world is extremely important, because some of us, we hope, live in the real world and are not living in a clinical trial environment.
Our next question comes from Vancouver. How do you approach giving weight loss advice to psoriasis patients?
It's very difficult for a dermatologist to suggest weight loss. There are some companies that are offering nutritionist counseling, that some biologic companies that offer nursing support with respect to weight loss and so forth. However, I truly think that this is best addressed by primary care physicians, and it should be addressed in the consultation note for the primary care physician to help guide the patient towards a healthier lifestyle, of which reducing weight.
Our next question comes from the same listener. How would you approach discussing smoking in patients with psoriasis and how it might affect their treatment?
It's hard for us as dermatologists to give smoking cessation guidance because we're not trained for that. And again, family physicians or primary care providers are better equipped to explain that to patients. For sure, when it's palmoplantar, smoking is addressed. And in general, patients may ask for generalized moderate to severe plaque psoriasis on the body. That's, let's say, non-palmoplantar. Does smoking make it worse? And I'll always answer that, well, I don't know any benefits to smoking, except for, as I mentioned previously, with possibly inflammatory bowel disease. But in general, I don't know any benefits to smoking. So a healthier lifestyle should lead to better treatment response and better overall survival of the patient that has psoriasis, because they have enough comorbidities to worry about.
Thank you, Dr. Vender. Listeners, if you have comments or questions for Dr. Vender, send them over. Send an email to health@chronicle.org. Add a voice clip attachment to your questions, and you might appear in a future episode of this podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can subscribe at Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced in cooperation with Sun Pharma Canada. I'm Jeremy Visser of Chronicle Companies. Your host has been Dr. Ron Vender from Hamilton, Ontario, founder and director of Dermatrials Research Incorporated and Venderm Consulting, specializing in treatments and management solutions for individuals with psoriasis. We'll talk again next week.
Don't use that. Do try this, says Vender on psoriasis.